Welcome back, folks. Tonight, in one of my dream conversations for this show, I welcome Joe Tedai. Joe is an author, entrepreneur, public speaker, and served as the co-host for the worldwide phenomenon Dual Survival. Enjoy. Joe Tedai, I can't believe I'm saying this right now. Welcome to the show. It's an honor. This is indescribable for me. Thank you.
Oh Lord, please. Thanks, man. Cheers.
It is. I'm a fan. You know, I want to start just by saying thank you for your service. My father was in the Marines. My grandfather was on Iwo Jima. I can never say thank you enough. You know, to the men and women who serve our country. So thank you.
Thanks,
for your service. I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, now usually when we start the show, we ask about education, professional background. I know we won't be able to talk about everything, but let's have a little fun tonight. Kick this off by asking you to tell me what you can, of course, about your education and your professional background prior to Dual Survival.
Okay. Well, basically, I grew up in a small town right outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and went to high school there. 10 days after I graduated high school, I went to the Marine Corps. I spent 4 years in the Marines. 3 years were with Force Recon, 2nd Force Recon, and then my last year was in Okinawa, Japan, with 3rd Recon Battalion. And then I got out, Chris. I loved the Marine Corps, but at that time, their force reconnaissance units were kind of like bastard children. The Marine Corps didn't know what to do with them. They didn't have MARSOC.
Yeah.
So I got out.
Yeah.
So when I got out, I ended up moving to Las Vegas, of all places. I lived there. I had a cousin that was a percussionist with Wayne Newton.
Ah.
So I moved there. I went to UNLV. And believe it or not, man, I studied for my Series 7 and my Series 63 stockbroker's exam at UNLV. I ended up passing those, and I worked for Bear Stearns for 5 years.
Yeah.
Man, I was literally that round peg in a square hole.
Yeah.
I thought I was Bill Gates. You know, I was like, let's see, 22 years old, 23, and I was making, I don't know, 75 grand a year.
Yeah.
And that was in the early 80s, right? So that's still decent money now.
It's good money.
I was living large. I lived in Vegas. But I just was really unhappy. I worked with a great bunch of guys, but I'm going to be very honest with those that are listening. I really got wrapped up a little bit too tight in the whole partying scene. I never did drugs, I'll tell you that, but I started drinking way too much. And it was every Friday and Saturday night, and it was to the point where, you know, where'd you leave your car stupid drunk like that, right? So it was time for me to leave. And the whole time that I was a stockbroker, I always had this little thing in the back of my head that there were still some more things I wanted to do in the military, you know? I decided to go back in the Army and go through Special Forces selection. And, you know, the Army picked me up. You know, I was already dive qualified and Force Recon guy and all that. So that was, it was a good fit.
Yeah.
Went through Special Forces selection. Went to the Q course, 18 Bravo, weapons sergeant, you know, ended up going to Halo school and a bunch of other schools. So when I had this opportunity kind of dropped in my lap, I was like, okay, I did the initial interview, and there's a lot of, they call them gates you got to go through.
After
I did my initial interview and basically passed that through the recruiter, the next thing you do was a polygraph test. And this is kind of like what separated the rock stars from the groupies, because I was told, and again, this is, I'm not just pulling this out of thin air. I was told by people there before I even took the polygraph, you know, they're like, don't get all excited. About 70% of the people that take it don't pass.
Wow.
So, you know, you think about that, right? Let's say they're looking at 100 guys, you know, all from Delta, SEAL Team 6, MARSOC, Special Forces, you know, with a minimum of 10 years experience, 70 out of the 10 out of the 100 aren't even going to pass the polygraph. So now you go from this, you know, this chunk of people down to 30 guys. Then you still have board interviews. Then you got to get your TSSCI clearance, which is a top secret special compartmentalized information clearance, which I didn't have. I had a secret clearance, but I didn't have a TSSCI. That took about 5 months. And then while that was going on, you know, I was doing my physical fitness, I had to do a class 3 flight physical. I had to go in front of a board. Once all of that was done, my operator training course formed up, basically started with 36 dudes and we graduated 4. Yeah. And so I was very, very look, dude, there are better men than I that didn't make it. It's a very unique unit because you've got all of these assets. You've got Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, soft guys. I mean, you could be in a room with 4 dudes and have 100 years of experience. So it was such a talent pool. Yeah. And it was great because you got to see how, you know, the Navy side did things and the Army. And then so it was a really eclectic group of dudes, right?
Yeah.
So I spent some time there. All of my tours over in Afghanistan and Iraq were with that unit that was not in the military. It was with this government unit. Yeah, dude, we did nothing but direct action, very sensitive, you know, operations that because of legalities of Title 10 and all these other things that the military can't do, this unit could do. It was humbling, man. Let me tell you, I thought I was pretty, you know, like, hey, man, you got your shit wired pretty tight. You've been to a lot of schools. I had no combat experience, you know, that was my only problem. Yeah. Physically, I was in really good shape. You know, shooting, I got pretty damn good because I do a lot of shooting there. But you'd be with guys that were just so far beyond your level where you thought, I'm at the tip of the spear. When the tip of the spear was 20 feet above me, you can get real good being around those kind of guys. You know what I mean? Here's a perfect analogy. Imagine if you were on a basketball team with nothing but Michael Jordans.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see what I mean? And I'm not Michael Jordan. So imagine me being the couple steps down from that. Imagine, and you're in a unit that's got an unlimited budget. Mm-hmm. Anything you want, you get, you know, any kind of training you want, you get. Any school you want to go to, you know, that kind of thing. So I did that for a while. And, you know, just like anybody, any business, any endeavor you're doing, there's a point in time where you just have had enough. I had a few events that I just, I just became a liability instead of an asset. I just didn't have it in my head anymore to do it. You know what I mean? And if you lose it up there, you're done, right? You know, the physical part, it don't take a whole lot to do this, brother.
No, that's an excellent point. Talk about that, making that decision, because I imagine that's a tough decision to make internally too. Like if you know, if you become mentally compromised, or, you know, however you want to put it, pulling yourself out of that position, that must have been tough.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that the straw that actually broke the camel's back, and I haven't really said this publicly, maybe a few times, but I'd gone to more than a few funerals. And the last funeral I went to was a guy who I was actually pretty, pretty close with. He gotten killed in Afghanistan from an IED. I was at his funeral and his son came up to me about 6 years old and said, "Where's my dad?"
Jesus.
And, you know, it's kind of hard to put that in context, but I don't want to do this no more. Like literally it was just that. I'm like, that was it. That was just like, my back was already breaking. And that was just you know, a good operator knows when to say when, because the sad fact is, Chris, my mistake is probably not going to cost me my life. What it's going to cost is some other guy that I'm working with, where I didn't clear my corner or I didn't do this. I'm not paying attention. It's normally the guy next to you or behind you that's going to take that mistake. You know, it's just the nature of the beast. And I knew that. I knew that. Yeah. And it was just, that was it, man. I just, you know, no harm, no foul. I could look in the mirror right now and say, hey, man, I did my duty and then some, and it was time to go. Yeah. to like move into what you're saying about dual survival. I got out. I took some time off. I took about 6 months. Yeah. I didn't do anything. Just hitting the gym, relaxing, you know, watching TV, working out, swimming, just really doing nothing. Just kind of just easing back into the whole thing. Because I was deployed 10 months out of the year. We had a pretty hectic schedule. I was in California training MARSOC. They were doing a pre-deployment exercise and I was contacted to help out and kind of just, you know, mentor some guys and things. And so I went out there, and while I was there, a friend of mine was contacting me saying, hey, have you seen this email that's going around the community, meaning the special operations community? I said, no. And it was from Discovery, and it basically just said, looking for special operations person for reality TV shows. Send headshot and resume. And I'm like, yeah, and I had no inclination of being on TV. None.
Yeah.
It just none. Yeah. It never even crossed my mind. But my friend was tenacious and called me every stinking day. Dude, you send your stuff in. I'm like, okay, bro, just to get you off my back, I sent my stuff in.
Yeah.
And you know, I end up getting a call about him. I don't know. It was like 3 weeks later. And it was some dude from the production company saying, hey, we got your information, Mr. Tedai, you know, but don't get too excited. You know, 1800 other guys turned in their information. I'm like, whatever, you know. Then I get a call 2 weeks later. Hey, you know, you're down to like to the top 300 or 200. I can't remember. I'm like, okay, great. Then I get a call 2 weeks later. You're down to the top 5.
Wow. That's when it gets real.
And then I was like, what? I'm like, you're joking me. This is actually a really funny story. I think your listeners will get a kick out of this, man.
Yeah.
This lady ends up calling me, and she was like the head of talent development or something. And she said, look, Mr. Tedai, we need you to go out to Arizona and meet the other host, which I didn't know who it was and what show it was. They never told
me. Right. Okay.
And I said, okay, and do a chemistry test. And I'm like, what is that? Like, what the hell is a chemistry? She said, you know, just like see how you guys interact together, like chemistry you have. I said, okay. So she said, you and the four other guys are going out there, and then we'll pick who we're going to pick. And I'm like, okay. It was about a week after that I was supposed to go. I come down with the flu, and I'm just sick as a dog. I almost canceled right there. I'm like, you know what? And I was vomiting and a diarrhea, and I had to fly to Arizona. And I was like, anyway, I ended up going. We get out there, and I check into my hotel room, and the guy says, look, stay in your room. Don't come out. I'll knock on your door in the morning, take you to a shuttle, and we're going to take you out to meet the other hosts. So I'm like, all right, whatever. Mm. So the next morning, I get up. They drive me out there by myself. I had never seen the other four dudes. They have like all these vehicles, and then they had 5 tents set up about 50 yards apart. And I could see these 4 other guys. One by one, they came up to each tent and basically said, hey, look, you're going to walk down this trail. And when you see a guy standing there, just pick up a conversation with him. Just start talking. I said, what do you want me to say? They said, it doesn't matter. And ignore everything else. And I'm like, I wonder what that means.
Yeah.
I said, okay, whatever. I go walking down. And it was kind of like it went up and then it went down. When I got to the top of this rise, all I see are a bunch of vehicles and cameras and tents set up. And I see Cody Lundin standing there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy shit, because I used to watch the show. And I said, well, I wonder what happened to Dave Canterbury, because I really like Dave and wealth of knowledge and learned a lot from him watching the show. And I'm like, absolutely. I wonder what happened. So the first thing I did is I walked up to Cody and I said, let me see your feet. That was the first thing I said to him. And he's like, oh, here. And he lifted his foot up and I touched his feet. And I was like, God dang. So we just started getting into this conversation. And what was funny, I found out later, Cody told me that the producer said, push these guys' buttons and get them to argue with you.
Yeah.
Right. That's what they wanted to see. You know, he started asking me, well, what makes you think, I don't know what he said to me, like, you think you can hang with me in a survival situation? And what makes you think you can do this? And, you know, you know how to, and I answered him. I'm just told him, yeah, man, I said, I may not have your skills, but I've got skills that you don't have. Well, I ended up finding out that these other four dudes, and there was like a former Delta guy, a former SEAL Team 6 dude, a MARSOC guy, and then another dude was a former Ranger. I was told they just kind of like acquiesced, because Cody's knows a lot, and he's a type A guy,
dominant personality,
very intimidating, especially when we're talking to a guy who's like world renowned as one of the best survival guys in the world. He's the Michael Jordan, right? Him and Matt Graham.
Yeah, so no shit.
I was told these other guys were just like, and they just kind of like didn't know what to say. And I was like, dude, I can hang. So anyway, what happens is they walk me back to my tent. The producer, the executive producer for Discovery, said within 10 minutes, they said, that's the guy right there. But they never told me.
Yeah.
They didn't tell me. I basically left and I said, hey, thank you for coming. And I'm like, oh, they didn't pick me. Right. So like 5 days, I don't remember, maybe a week later, I'm driving down the road and my phone rings and I look at it and it was like a 516 area code. I'm like, 516. I'm like, I think that's New York or something.
Yeah.
Like, who's calling me from New York? So I go, hello, this guy on the other end of the phone, real serious voice, goes, is this Joe Tedai? And I'm like, yep, it is. And he's like, well, my name is so-and-so and I'm an attorney. And I'm like, click. And I hung up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, why is an attorney calling me from New York? Like, right? So I set my phone down and it rang again. And I looked down and it was the same number. And this is, for those of you listening, this is that road. If I would not have answered it, the guy told me they were calling the next guy. So I picked up the phone and I said, hello. And the guy goes, hey, I think we got disconnected. And I was kind of a shithead, man. I said, what do you want? He said, did you not just do a chemistry test for discovery? I said, yeah. He's like, do you want the freaking job or not? I remember, dude, I was so shocked. It caught me off guard so bad. I remember I pulled off into this gas station in this car wash area and I got out of my car and I was just stymied for a minute because he was asking me to basically go from the blackest black op unit in the world to being on TV.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? I went from as far black to as far white as you basically can go in the spectrum. Yeah. And it was a big decision, man. And he said, I need an answer right now.
That's a hell of an adjustment.
Yeah. Okay, fine. You're on. He said, congratulations. You know, stay off the phone for the next hour. We're going to have some people calling you. And he says, do you have an attorney and an accountant? I'm like, no. He says, you better get one of each. And so, and that's basically how I got on the show. It was a complete fluke.
Yeah.
I didn't have YouTube videos out there where they could say, oh, check out this dude. I didn't have any of that. You know, it was just, I sent my crap in. They read it. Oh, I did do one thing I forgot. I did do like a very quick 10-minute interview, kind of like what we're doing. So they had a picture of me, like what I would look like on TV and talking and all that stuff. And the trick with reality TV, and this is what the executive producer, Mr. Horowitz, told me. He's like, Joe, we didn't pick you because you're an actor. Because they're not. We picked you to be real.
Yeah.
Just because there's a camera stuck in your face doesn't mean you go into acting mode. And I will tell you, that is one of the reasons why Matt and I took that show to the highest ratings. Because once we left and they hired these other people, you could tell that they were acting. They were over exaggerating stuff and you know, like, you can't do that because people will see right through it. So the whole time I was on the show, I was just me. I didn't do anything different that I would have done if it would have been, you know, a real scenario. I'd have done it exactly the same. I would have talked the same. I would have got mad the same. I would have laughed the same. I didn't do anything that was quote unquote acting ever. And either did Matt, and neither did Cody. Cody wasn't that way. Yeah. He was just himself.
What's, you talked about the first time you met Cody. You touched on, you know, you mentioned Matt Graham. I'm a big fan of both of those guys, obviously. Tell me the best part about working with each of them. If you could pick one thing out of, you know, out of all the things.
The thing about Cody is, well, and Matt, they both live that lifestyle. And what I mean by that is they don't have electricity. Like, Cody's house is built facing Solar South and he collects his own rainwater. He lives the lifestyle. I don't. I like my bed. I like my computer. I like my jacuzzi. I like, right? It's all good. Well, he lives that lifestyle. I would say with Cody, his technical knowledge, man, it was so in-depth. It was scary. When it, like, he could quote stuff off the top of his head about everything to the finite details. He had a vast knowledge of information about primitive survival. Matt was a very athletic guy. I mean, obviously you look at him, he's very fit, but a lot of people don't know, like, this guy ran, what is that trail in California? He like ran the whole trail. It was like 1400 miles or something. He did it in like 2 months.
Yeah, it's like up the coast.
Yeah, he was a super, super athletic guy, an amazing climber, swimmer, very, very athletic. The way he did like his fires and stuff was very unusual. He would spin things, like, instead of making, you know, fire by friction with a little stick this big, he would make one that's this big. And we would he had all these like wazoo ways of doing stuff. But both of those guys, I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, have forgotten more about primitive survival than I'll ever even know. When I went into the show, they didn't hire me because I'm a survival guy. They hired me because of my quote unquote pedigree in special operations. They wanted that yin and yang. They wanted a camp. I wanted to get the hell out of it. Right. That's it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. You know, get on your horse and go until you can't go no more. Yeah. And so that was the whole yin and yang of the show. But I will tell you, to be honest, for me to quantify it, if I would have said prior to getting on Dual Survival, my survival scale was probably a 3. Basic knowledge. Basic knowledge that most soft guys would know. After shooting 41 episodes with both of those guys, I would definitely say that my skill set's above average. It's not at Cody Lundin level, and it's not at Matt Graham level, but it's certainly above the level of what you're going to find in special operations. That's for sure, because you just don't get into the finite stuff of primitive survival like that. It's like not really needed. Yeah. But yeah, matter of fact, I wish I had it right here. I used to have a notebook with me that I kept in a waterproof binder because there was so much information being put out. I knew I'd never remember because I was tired. So I literally have a binder that's an inch thick on both sides of just like, this is how you do this. And don't forget to do this. And oh, it matters the wood grain. Oh, and the ambient air temperature. Oh, and this and oh, and that, like stuff that you would never think of. I didn't know that if you just rub two dry sticks together, you could start a fire. That's not true. You have to get that ember to a certain temperature, and there has to be a certain amount of grain in the wood. It can't just be dry wood. It's got to have a certain amount of grain to it. If you're at altitude, at the ambient air temperature, there's all kinds of stuff that go into it. And that's the kind of stuff those guys were able to teach when they were on the show, and I learned from them as well. I mean, I had a few tricks up my sleeve too.
Oh, you did.
You know.
Yeah. There's some great moments on the show. Obviously a lot of the stuff you did too, and just the dry. I want to talk about like spinning that into like a post, you know, really just a post career, multiple careers after Dual Survival. I mean, you got the book that you just came out, wrote, you've got Spartan Americana, you've got T1, you've got all these, you know, you're a motivational speaker. You come on shows like this and talk to people like me. So talk a little bit about sort of parlaying that your early career and your experience into multiple hats now.
Well, like you said, the first thing I did is I wanted to write a book. But Discovery in its infinite wisdom wouldn't let me do it. And I was under contract with them. So I had to wait until my contract completely expired. And then I was approached by a publishing company to write my book. And they said, we want you to write an autobiography basically on your life and lessons learned. I'm like, good. That's exactly what I wanted to do. And the gentleman, Mr. Kohler, that owns the publishing company, he was a huge mentor for me. Because look, dude, I barely graduated English, right? So here I am trying to write a book. And so for those of you that think it's easy, you think it would be easy to write a book about yourself, was actually one of the most difficult things I've done. Because one, it brought up a lot of emotional stuff, a lot of baggage.
Yeah, sure.
And then you only have so many chapters and so many, I think it was 6,000 words per chapter. Right. There was just, it's all laid out for you. So you start, and I'm very long winded. So you start talking about your childhood or something, you can go on and on and on and on. And then you look down here at the word count, and you're like at 8,000 words. You're like, too many. Right. So that was very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. And you'll get brain freeze. You'll be talking about something and you'll say the same word over and over and over and over and over, and you won't even notice it. Things become very myopic. You'll be typing and not really hearing what you're saying. And so it was difficult. But here's something actually really funny, and I guarantee you, who's ever watching this is probably about to bust out laughing. And it's all good. Have a laugh on me, because it's actually kind of funny. It took about a year to write the book. And I asked Mr. Kohler, I said, you know, what do I do while I'm typing my book on the computer? He's like, listen to some music that motivates you. You know, anything like that, just keep your brain, because I can't sit quiet. I need like background noise. Yeah. So I'm like, all right, great. So Led Zeppelin's my favorite group. And so I started playing Led Zeppelin, but it was too intense. I was getting too much into the music and not paying attention to what I'm doing. So then I tried some other, you know, 70s, 80s music and 90s music. I couldn't find the right groove. So one day I'm sitting there and I'm typing, and I grab the TV clicker and I turn on the TV, didn't even know what station it was on. And I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I hear, it's your world. You can put a cloud right here. I think we're just going to put a tree. and it was Bob Ross.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you, brother, I used to watch that guy as a kid. I wrote 90% of my book listening to Bob Ross talk.
Yeah. Well, he's an icon. I mean, I've done that. I've watched a lot of Ross, especially ever since Netflix and, you know, all that stuff.
Yep.
And YouTube. And yeah, he's pretty awesome.
It was just the right flavor of very soothing voice.
Yeah, right.
Brought back memories as a kid so I could start regurgitating. You know what I mean? It was the perfect, yeah, for me, the perfect stimulus to write my book. And so I've literally watched every single one of his episodes. Like, it's so funny.
Yeah.
And I still watched one the other day. Anyway, I wrote my book listening to Bob Ross, and if the guy was still alive, I'd probably send him an email thanking him. But
yeah,
it was difficult, bro. It was.
Yeah.
I talk about the loss of a very dear friend in a helicopter accident. I talk about the loss of my mother.
Yeah.
I talk about a really scary situation in Afghanistan that happened to me. Had to relive through that. It was therapy too. You know what I mean? Like.
Mm-hmm.
Not a psychologist, but it helped me just kind of filter through some stuff. And I think once you put stuff out there, it's like, here it is, man. I'm not perfect. You know, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I was raised in the projects and stole my clothes out of a Goodwill box. And, you know, hey, it is what it is.
Right.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed of it. I wouldn't change any of it, but it was tough when you're knowing people are going to read this and go, you know, what are they going to think?
Yeah.
Nah, you know what? You're going to have your critics anyway. And it doesn't matter. But yeah, man, that was a good thing for me. It was really good.
Yeah. Well, you've demonstrated it a little bit tonight, but you know, I've heard you talk a lot about striking a perfect balance just in life in general, what that means for you personally. I'm a big proponent of The Secret, of the universe, and you know, whether it's your holy guardian angel or whatever,
sure,
you know, whatever it is, I'm a big proponent of that. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I love where your head's at with that. And I love how you're just very open and honest about it.
Yeah. So, man, I'll be honest with you. Like, if you would have said this to me 20 years ago, I'd have been like, I ain't buying it.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, guys, those who listen, guys, girls, we're all human beings. We all make mistakes, right? We make bad decisions. We do things sometimes that you're not proud of. When you start getting more in tune and making yourself a better person and putting a positive vibe out there instead of this negative vibe that I was carrying around for a long, long time. And I did. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know why, Chris. I just did. You know, I wouldn't wake up with a positive attitude. The cup was always half empty and all that stuff. Right. And I'll tell you who helped me with this was my partner, Dale Comstock, my buddy Dale, who I do my coaching with. He was the one that actually was like, dude, let me explain to you why things aren't working out for you. And the minute I started doing this, I started seeing these little subtle changes. It wasn't like, boom, it was like a little bit, like he says, 1%, 1%, 1%, 1%. Oh, now you're at a 20%. That's the difference. So when I started putting these pieces together and just living a better life, things started happening. People, hey, you got lucky. I'm not so sure about that. I just put out the right vibe and got rid of all the negative bullshit and the negative people in my life. That was one of the things, Chris, that I was doing, is I had the wrong people around me, right? Mm-hmm. I just did. The wrong girlfriends, the wrong this, the wrong that. And the minute I got rid of it and I got good people around me, which I do now, things started changing. Again, not dramatically. It was just like this little machine started creeping like that. And so good things started happening.
Yeah.
And that's not a coincidence. There is no way somebody could sell me and said, that's just a coincidence. There is no way it was a coincidence. I seen it with my own eyes. Dale explains it about frequency. Everything's at a certain frequency in the universe. I mean, he's got his doctorate in this stuff, and I never understood it, but he's explained it to me. And that's part of our coaching, part of our tier one performance coaching package, is understanding how this works. Because I didn't know how it worked. And if you would have told me 20 years ago, you're like, dude, you're high. Like, really, where are you, you know, where are you pulling us out of? When in fact, there's real science behind it. And there's real psychology behind it. I talk about it when I do speaking engagements, and it's real. You know, it's like goal setting. You know, I was just did the speaking engagement, this company in Florida. I flew down there and I said, who here has ever put like pictures of like mansions and Lamborghinis on your windows? And I'm like, that don't work. All right. That don't work. That's not how you accomplish a goal. And so, you know, I got into the whole goal setting thing. And again, Dale is really, really good at this. And I learned so much from him. But yeah, man. And then just I started Spartan Americana. Mm-hmm. We do training, the WETC course, the Warrior's Edge training course. And then I do speaking engagements. COVID really crushed that pretty hard. I didn't do a speaking engagement for almost 2 years. So I just did two recently. And then, of course, I came out with T1 Performance Nutrition, which is for men over 45. And we've got four products, a pre-workout, an immune boost, a multivitamin, and a testosterone booster. It's a crowded market. There's a lot of people out there selling this stuff. So you got to be patient, right? You're not going to get rich overnight kind of thing. You just reinvest all your money and just keep plugging away, plugging away, plugging away. And that's it, man. Just taking care of myself physically. I'm in probably in the best shape of my life I've ever been in. Literally, if I didn't get hurt, I could go through selection again, no problem.
Yeah.
And not even really stress over it. Cause now I spent about 21 hours a week working out. It's about 21 hours a week. That's between going to the gym, lifting, swimming, biking, running, hiking, you add it all together. Yeah. So I keep track about 21 hours a week. Yeah. I work out. It's good for my head.
It is. It's a mental game. As you've stated so many times in the show, I hearing you talk about all this and we'll wrap up here in a little bit. I stole this from there's a comedian, Jimmy Carr, really famous. I stole this from him, but there's an amazing story about Kurt Vonnegut and Joseph Heller. Joseph Heller wrote Catch 22, really famous, you know, I'm sure. So they're at this party and the party's, you know, it's incredible. He's married to a supermodel. The house is unbelievable. And Kurt Vonnegut, he's like this incredible writer. And he says to Joseph Heller, this guy made more money in one day last week than you made out of Catch 22. And Joseph goes, yeah, but I got something he'll never have, enough.
Wow.
And I loved that quote. I really loved that quote. And what I see with men like you and people that are out there doing this, you know, doing what you do with Spartan Americana and there's almost a piece that you have, and it's an internal piece, and you can talk, I'm sure, you know, more expertly about this than I can. But when you reach a certain point and everything is sort of at a secure vibration in your life, there's just a certain piece. You just can't be knocked off your rocker. It's an impossibility almost. And I think that's we're lucky to get to that point. We're lucky to aspire to that point.
Oh, bro, Chris, you could not have said it better. And let me tell you one of the major mistakes that I made. I really want your viewers to listen to what I'm about to say, because this is profoundly important. And this was a huge game changer. Mm. Don't chase money.
Yeah.
When you put money as the ultimate goal, I want to make a lot of money. I want to have this. I want to have this. I personally believe you'll never find it because your motivations are wrong. If you chase the money, I'm just going to tell you my experience. The more I chased it, the farther away it got from me. And it was really weird, dude. I would have like five deals going on, right? Flipping a house, doing this, money, money, money. And all of them would just, and I'm like, what are the odds of that happening? Mm-hmm. Of all of them going away, not just one, all of them.
Right.
And that happened over and over and over. I started thinking this is not a coincidence, because the law of averages would one of these would have worked. Just one.
Yeah.
Zero were happening. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And I talked to Dale about it. He's like, quit chasing money, dude. Quit chasing money. Chase the positive success, but quit trying to quantify. I want this and I want that. And I want to make 500 grand. I want to make a million. I want to make 10 million. Stop doing that. So I did. Mm. And slowly, man, I was like, wow, ain't this no joke? Ain't this no joke?
Yeah.
For those of you that do that, look, I did it for years and failed miserably, miserably. Mm. When I stopped doing it, the universe started giving me these weird little, I called them gold nuggets, little gold nugget,
right?
Little gold nugget. And then I took that little gold nugget and I bought some Bitcoin, and that little nugget got a little bit bigger. And I took that gold coin out and did it. And it's a little bit, and you know, I'm not rich by now. I live comfortably, you know. I've got a beautiful home, live out in the country, got a Harley and a car and a truck. And, you know, that's one thing too. I went from being a very materialistic kind of person. I want this, I want that, and I want that, to like, I'm golden, man. Like, I've got my health.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need that stuff anymore. And it was probably, Chris, because of a lack of confidence, it was all internal. You know what I mean? mm-hmm. I had to have, you know, which I just sold. I had a Z06 Corvette, beautiful car. I just sold it, you know, because right now you sell your car for basically what I bought, what I paid for it. So yeah. Anyway, you know, it's just, and it's all good. Mm. It just took a few smacks in the face to realize that you're doing this all wrong. You know what yeah. I mean? Like you're not doing the right thing here. And I had to change it. And so I was just very lucky to meet certain people in my life, like Dale, that influenced me in a positive way to look at things a little bit differently, just tweak your brain. And things just started happening, man.
Yeah. Well, last question of the night before I get out of your way. The overarching theme of this show for season two, anyway, is the ability to deal with failure and what that's like for different people in different careers. You've talked, you know, expertly about this tonight on multiple topics, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about just handling failure, you know, as an overall general concept, what you do with that, you know, what you've done with that personally, and what advice would you give to people that are maybe in a bad spot right now in one or multiple ways in their lives? How do you deal with that?
Look, let me tell you, twice in my life, and once not too long ago, I was flat broke. Mm. When I mean flat broke, I mean flat broke. No money in the bank, didn't have a pot to piss in and a window to throw it out of, right? I looked at myself like an utter failure. I have failed at many, many things in my life. Failed marriage.
Yeah.
You know, I was never home.
Yeah.
Failed relationships. Failed businesses.
Right.
The list goes on and on, right? But let me just tell you what I have learned internally about failure. And it's very true. And it sounds very apropos, but you do learn more from your failures than you'll ever learn by hitting a grand slam home run.
Mm.
You learn from these failures so much more than you could possibly do from being successful. It's what you do when you fail.
Yeah.
It's so easy to give up. It really is. I mean, I don't care what background it, you get pounded into the ground so many times, like a tent peg. We're all human beings. There's only so much you can take.
Right.
What I would tell you is one of the biggest blessings I've ever had is just having the right people around to pull you back out of the ground after you get pounded into the ground.
Yeah.
If you have that, you're a blessed person. You're rich. Let me just tell you right now.
Yeah.
You're rich because there's basically two people in my life. I'm 57 years old. I got two people in my life that I can count on 100%. Two. And these are the people that I go to when things don't go right. You know, failures can be devastating. I remember when I was married and making fun of friends. Oh, how could you get divorced? What a loser.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here I am. I'm a divorced man. I don't have any children, but still divorced.
Yeah.
I had a great wife, great life, lived on the water, had all the toys. And, you know, we both made really good money and, you know, just a failed marriage. And it was my fault. 100% my fault. It's because I chose my career over my marriage.
Yeah.
And so, and I take responsibility for that.
Yeah.
But failure, guys, you know what? It's going to happen. You just can't let it get under your skin because it festers. The sooner you can like off gas it, whether it's talk to somebody about it or go scream out in the woods, whatever you need to do, or go to the gym, you cannot, because you're carrying, here it is, ready? You are carrying around negative energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the story.
Yeah.
What you portray is what you're going to get. That is the law of the universe, right? And you put out positive, you get positive.
Mm.
You put out negative, you're going to get negative. I would have never, Chris, I'm telling you right now, you couldn't have sold this to me if you tried 20 years ago. I'm like, dude, you know, you're out of touch with reality. And I don't even get into the whole religious application of this. I mean, I'm a Christian man, but I'm just telling you, the way I feel the universe works, God, whatever you want to talk about, it's what you put out is what you're going to get. So for those of you that are going through a tough time, you know, hey, been there, done that. Lean on the people that you can absolutely trust and count on.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. You'll know who your friends are, because I learned this the hard way. When I was on TV and I was, you know, everybody knew who I was and I was making money, everybody wanted to be my friend.
Yeah.
The minute I wasn't on TV, right? It was, so those people were cut out of my life immediately.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things I talk about when I speak is if you've got negative people in your life, you basically have a few choices. One, you can tell them to stop bringing that negativity into your life and they acquiesce and they say, fine, or you can ignore it, which is definitely not the answer because you're still going to deal with all the negative BS, or you can get rid of them.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you this real quick. I had a friend in my life. I've known this guy for 40 years, grew up with him, maintained contact with him all through my careers, everything. We're very, very close. He's a little older than I am. When he hit 50, I don't know what happened to him, but he just became a very negative person. I used to say to him, bro, you are the guy that would find $1 million in a briefcase and bitch that the briefcase was old. You know what I mean? Like, just that's where he was. And I don't know why. Well, and I talked to this guy 2-3 days a week, and it started affecting my life.
Yeah.
It started affecting my workouts. It started affecting my relationship, because I'd keep all this negative in it. I'd be mad and angry, and he would be pushing my buttons, and it was like having gum on the bottom of my shoe. Yeah. I couldn't get off of it.
Yeah.
Right. So one day we talked on the phone, and I said, I need you to listen to me very carefully. What I'm about to tell you is straight up going to happen. I said, I love you like a brother. I've known you my whole life. I've known your family. Your family has known mine, and blah, blah, blah. But if you continue with all this negative, 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 and never talk, I said, we're done. I will never talk to you again. Wow. He didn't get it.
Wow.
And I haven't spoken to him since. Now, some of you listening like, oh, damn, dude, you're a bastard. Well, no, I'm not a bastard. I don't need that kind of negativity day after day after day after day being put in my ear. It's like taking a thumb drive and sticking your ear and downloading a bunch of negative crap all day long when I'm trying to focus over here on good stuff. You have those choices. If you choose to deal with that stuff, just understand the potential of what it can do to you. And if you're working on something, whether it's a business or a relationship or whatever, it's just that you cannot carry that stuff around with you. You just can't. And I'm 100% believer. Once I kind of got him out of my life, remember I was talking about this, that was one of the things started happening. Right, my mental state got better. I was more positive every day. I woke up, the glass was half full, not half empty. Right. Chris, it's a harsh life. You got to make harsh decisions sometimes. And it hurt me for a year. There were so many times I wanted to call him up and go, man, I'm sorry. You know, I don't know what I was thinking, but I never did.
Yeah.
I just was like, I knew this was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I gave him the opportunity. I said, please stop doing this. And he didn't.
Sometimes you got to cut the fat as hard as it is.
Yes, sir. You do. You know, I think about him often, but I won't call him and talk to him. I just won't.
That's amazing. But that's necessary. Amazing, but necessary. You know, important to your life, to your own mental capacity, your own mental health.
Dude, we all have choices, Chris, right? We have choices. Right. You have the choice between right and wrong, yes or no, you know, and people that don't take responsibility for their own life and deal with these types of, I call them emotional vampires. Yeah. Is what I call them. They suck the life out of you, especially in relationships, like man-woman relationships, right? Heterosexual relationships, right? Let's just, I'm a heterosexual man, so let's just understand man or woman. When you're in those type of caustic relationships, whether you're married or dating or whatever, sooner or later, it's going to bite you in the ass. It's going to take its toll on you. And you know, you have to be strong enough to say this. And I said this in my last speaking engagement, and a couple people gasped. And it was mostly women, but I said this, you know, just like I told my friend, I love you, but guess what? I love me more.
Yeah.
Call me what you want. Those are the facts. I love you, but I love me more. I love myself more, and I deserve better. They're tough calls, man, especially if you are, you know, in a relationship with a woman, or you're a woman in a relationship with a man, and you love them and you've got that bond, but you know, things are just wrong. You got a decision to make. Either fix it, or it's like right now, you know, I'm in a great relationship. My girlfriend and I, we are literally, it's so weird. You say opposites attract, but like we're so uniquely the same in so many different ways. And she's a raging type A woman, physically fit, attractive, cooks like a gourmet chef, but she doesn't take crap off of me, which I love. When I step out of line, she puts me right back in my place. And that's the kind of woman I need to be with. You know what I mean? I'm not perfect, but it takes a strong woman like her to manage somebody like myself. You know, I'm just a type A guy. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I let my emotions get the best of me, or I say the wrong thing, or I don't say the right thing. And, you know, she lets me know, and that's the right person for me. You know what I mean? Even though it can be painful at times, knowing that, man, I just said something that probably upset her. You know what I mean? Or I didn't do this, or I, you know, we all make mistakes, but I think having the right yin and yang in your life will solve a lot of the failures. I really do, man. Yeah. I've experienced this. I really have.
Yeah.
If I got Carrie right now and she's known me for quite a while, and if she told you what she has seen happen to me in the last year, she'd say it's not a coincidence. There's no way in hell.
Well, not to put too emotional of a point on the end of this conversation, but I have wanted to tell you for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I'm about to be 40 in September. This is why I've reached out to you. About to be 40 in September. I've had two major heart procedures already. I'm looking at having maybe another one this coming year. And I remember being in recovery from my second procedure, and I felt broken, and I just felt,
sure,
you know, I couldn't play with my son,
sure,
couldn't have any relationship with my wife,
sure.
And I'm flipping through channels, and I got, you know, see Dual Survival on there, and I go on Discovery Plus, and I start binging the show, and I start watching you. It was you at the season where you and Matt meet for the first time, and then of course I went back and watched all of it. I want to thank you because that whether you know it or not, and this is a really amazing way of how the universe works and how people kind of come into each other's lives, sure, so to speak, in a way. You guys, you and Matt, and the camaraderie you guys had, and you know, the stuff you guys talked about in the show brought me back from the brink of just kind of being a broken person.
Oh, wow.
And I want to say thank you. And so, you know, when I started doing this show, I was like, I've got to reach out to you to see if you'd be willing to sit down with me. So I just want to publicly say that.
Well, I didn't know that, Chris. And I don't even know how to respond to that. All I can tell you is I'm glad that, you know, just watching the show helped you. Because look, I've had health issues too, that I've had to deal with. You and I both know when you have things that are debilitating, because I'm 57, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not getting any younger, right? Yeah. So I've had some health issues. I was actually recently severely injured at the gym, and had a TBI. Mm. Something hit me on the head and cracked my skull open, and it's very serious injury. Yeah. I almost died.
Jesus.
That's amazing, dude. You know what? I can honestly tell you, Chris, after you said that, all the BS that I had to go through on that show, knowing that it helped one person like it helped you, was definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Seriously, dude. That's quite an interesting and humbling testimony.
This has been an absolute absolute pleasure. God, you have so many hats. The book is Loan Operator, How to Survive and Thrive in the Modern Age. Yep. Spartan Americana. We'll have links to all this. T1 Performance Nutrition, Dual Survival, and like 400 other things. I could go on all day. thank you, Joe, for spending so much time with me tonight. I appreciate it. And thank you again for your service.
Oh, thanks, man. My pleasure.
Another conversation behind us. Thanks for hanging out with me and my friends. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media as we post each new conversation as they air. News, show information, and more. Go to facebook.com/ me and my friends pod. On Twitter, you can search the handle me my friends pod. And on Instagram, search the handle me and my friends pod. If you enjoyed the conversation tonight, please do me a favor and head to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher and rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Me and My Friends is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by me, Chris Williamson. The show's music is created and performed by producer Riddiman. The opinions on Me and My Friends are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. Chris Evan Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. Any audio clips used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of education and entertainment, and no infringement is ever intended. Me and My Friends is an exclusive trademark of Chris Evan Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Evan Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Me and My Friends is a Chris Evan Films production. Copyright 2022. All rights reserved.